Hello and welcome to the Gab and Jules show. Still no Gab today, still on holiday, so Nedim Manua.
I'm going to try and fill his boots, but it's going to be very tough, but I'm going to do my best.
It's a privilege to have you on, my friend. And Gab is missing out because there's been so many things happening so far this week between the Champions League, Tuesday, Wednesday, of course, some big Premier League games as well from at the top of the table and also at the bottom of the table. Yep. So we've got a really packed show, but really we need to start in Madrid.
Yes.
And in that quite remarkable Atletico Madrid-Manchester United game in the first leg of the last 16 of the Champions League. A poor performance by United in many respects, but in the end, somehow a decent result. Is that a good way for you to sum it up? Poor but decent result in the end?
Yeah, for sure. I think I would 100% agree with that. I think when they were going into the game, a lot of people over in the UK were thinking, you know, United are probably going to win because Atletico have had such a poor season domestically. But it's the same for Man United. So it's a game between two sides fighting to try and even qualify for the competition again next year.
Yeah.
But that performance from Atletico, I thought, in the first bit, was to put United under pressure. And United looked very poor, looked very sloppy. And it's almost gotten to the point, in my opinion, where you're almost more surprised if they play really well for a prolonged period of time as opposed to, say, the way that they played yesterday. But in fairness, you know, Alanga came on, he made a difference, he scored the goal. And then the mentality can be completely switched. And I think for some, with a manager, you want to see a change in performance. You want to see that progression. But when the manager's going to be leaving at the end of the season anyway, I suppose results are just the biggest thing, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess. The one thing that got me really, really early on is Rangnick said we need to start on the front foot, like we did at Leeds on Sunday in the Premier League. This is very important.
Yeah.
Those players are very experienced, all of them. They know exactly the kind of atmosphere they will be, which will be similar to the one at Elland Road at Leeds. They arrive at the stadium, there's all the Atleti fans with the flares. So they know it's a big game, it's a big atmosphere. It's going to be hostile. Mm-hmm. And what do? They have probably the most lethargic first 15, 20 minutes for sure, probably first 45 minutes that we've seen from them and from a lot of teams this season. So what, you're not ready psychologically? Is the manager not giving you the tools to be ready? It's not just McTominay not being there
and have that
fiery personality in midfield.
I think it's interesting because at times, you know, we can blame a manager, but then I would challenge anybody within their workplace. Do they get inspired by their boss? Like, if you know what I mean? If you're in the office and your boss comes through and says, today's your big day, needs to crunch those numbers, would you be like, yeah, I'm going to crunch those numbers?
Depends how he says it, I guess.
Well, maybe. But at the end of the day, it comes down to you. And I think for those players to start the way that they did, it's so naive because you can't offer encouragement to Atletico at home with their manager G'ing up the crowd, the players G'ing up the crowd, because that can be such a hostile place to play. So it's bizarre that they did that. But then in the same breath, like, what do we expect? Is that, like, I don't want to sound like I'm bashing Man United because I don't really
try not
to.
No, but it's a fair assessment.
But it's just like, there are lots of good players on paper. They look really good, and I think they have an idea of what they need to do. But it seems like at the minute, on a week-to-week basis, it's just not there. And you've got to ask the question why.
Were they not helped by Rangnick's tactics from kickoff? So Lindelof are right back. When you've got Diogo Dalot and Wan-Bissaka on the bench, it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I know McTominay is ill, you can't play him, but Fred and Pogba as a partnership, and we've seen it for many years, it doesn't work.
No.
It's just they Fred is almost swamped by Pogba. Pogba in a game like this was really poor, and Kondogbia showed him the way he should have played.
Yeah.
And then you've got obviously the Cristiano conundrum. One touch, Nathan. One touch in the Atletico box in the whole 90 minutes. How come he touched the ball once, only once in the box?
I genuinely don't know. I really, really don't know. But, I do know. It's because there's not enough creativity within the side. They don't control possession enough. They don't control possession enough higher up in the field to be able to get those touches. And sometimes if you're doing it, like say for Alanga when he scored his goal, he's getting the touch purely because the game was stretched. But when the game's not stretched, the people playing up there, it's not easy access to get in the box, especially against a side that committed. But I'm with you, the right-back situation with Lindelof, I didn't really get it. As I saw the team come out, I thought maybe they're playing a three or something.
Yeah, me too.
But then to see him playing right-back is weird with two right-backs on the side. But he had an idea about it. And then the partnership of Fred and Pogba, for as good as, say, it could potentially be, it literally wasn't there, and it definitely needed to be there in that game. But again, we take the positives. They got a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, of course. When Rangnick said at the end, some players in our team should get inspired by the way Elanga plays, who do you think is targeting, or we all know who it is?
We've probably got a rough idea of who he's talking to in particular, but like, it's tough for
a manager to come out and say something like this,
yeah,
right?
But you can deny you're talking about anyone in particular. Someone could say, oh, must be this guy. I say, well, I didn't say his name, did I? Because it could be obvious, you know what I mean? Sure. We have certain managers in the Premier League who are being very clear about their emotions at the minute, which we'll get into. But yeah, I know what he's trying to say, and it was good to see him come on and to be so front foot and to be stretching again.
He's a good kid.
Exactly.
We need to show some love, of course, to Athletic, because for me, certainly, it was the best performance of the season. I didn't expect them to play that way, to not just be more solid defensively. I mean, it was easy because of how poor United were, but still, to be on the front foot, to have Joao Felix in that kind of form. I mean, this is what you paid 120 million for, you know? And yes, they pressed really well. I think they were helped by the fact that because of Lindelof at right back, the only way really United could play or try to play out of the press was on the left-hand side, which was too predictable. Mm-hmm. But I thought they pressed well, they moved well, they were very aggressive in midfield, and they had Joao Felix.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think going into the game, I don't have high expectations for Atletico. You see the amount of goals conceded in La Liga.
Yeah.
You're thinking, well, this could be an interesting game. But in fairness to them, it felt like Atletico of old in terms of how they play in certain Champions League games, where the crowd get right into it. They're sort of swarming on the opposition. And like, they've got such a great relationship, the players and the fans.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they sort of feed off each other. So when they go out and press and they put you under pressure, the crowd are going to say they want more, and they keep giving them more. And for United, they were so sloppy at times in possession that it sort of played into that sort of atmosphere, which you don't need when you play against a side like that. So I'd say you have to give them credit.
Yeah.
Obviously disappointed because it's only 1-1, but they should have every confidence going to Old Trafford because other teams have won there as well.
The thing is, at this level, and we saw it with Chelsea and Lille, this is where you get found out. This is where you limit your limit as a team or as an individual, or if you're good enough or not good enough at this level, it shows.
Yeah.
And I think collectively we saw on Wednesday night that even a Atletico Madrid team that had been in crisis at times this season, that lost 4 in a row in La Liga, is still collectively on that game, certainly on Wednesday night, better than the United team that is still searching for whatever identity they have or whatever collective strength they have.
Yeah.
There's no away goals now. The rule of the away goal is gone, which I'm very happy with, by the way. So that means that before, the Elanga goal would have had a much bigger
influence.
But how do you see that second leg? There's 3 weeks to go, so a lot of things can happen, of course.
Yeah, a lot of things can happen. I think there's a Manchester derby before it as stuff.
There are big games coming up, Liverpool
too. That could be a very significant week, 2 weeks for Manchester United in general.
Yeah,
you know, everything could be great. It could be a disaster. But the second leg, like, that atmosphere at the Metropolitano is very unique, playing against Atletico Madrid under Diego Simeone, with the passion and drive and all that in the Champions League. You can see in the league, it's not worked out for them. But a foreign rival coming in, a club the size of Man United, that can be really, really hostile.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think for Atletico, their style of play, like, you said it there, it's identity. They have an identity. It's a very, very clear and obvious one. It's the type of thing you don't want to come up against if you're not in the best form.
Yeah.
Because, say if Atletico score the first goal at Old Trafford, I could see that just being the end to the game. You know, it could be in the fifth minute or something. And it could be, like, a miserable atmosphere there. So I think, I'm going to say, I think the first goal is going to be key. It might not necessarily be decisive, but I think it'll be key in terms of style. Because if Atletico get it, they can revert to their identity. Whereas if United get it, Atletico maybe have to change theirs and try and push on a bit more. And that probably doesn't play to their strength. So I think it'll be an interesting game. And you hope that both sides are probably in better form as you come into it. So it makes for a better game. But if I was a United guy, which I hope to never be, what I'd say is, like, don't expect it to be an easy game purely because you're at home now and you've got the crowd.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be very tough, because let's knock out the Champions
League. But something has to, change for United in the attitude, maybe in the lineup as well. So we talked about right back. I mean, I don't know what Harry Maguire is doing on the Joao Felix goal in terms of man marking him. We know that on set pieces United have struggled this season, but or is it me being too harsh?
No. I don't think you're being too harsh, because I think, as far as football goes, every time a goal is conceded, you can look back and see where you could have done better. You can't always guarantee that they won't score, because at the end of the day, the goals are as wide as they are because they want to see goals. But he's very flat-footed. I think somebody's stealing a march on you to get a free header as such from across, which seems like everybody knows is coming in.
Yeah.
I think that's a significant problem, because you should be able to sense that danger a bit better. And I think with that, he needs to either try and potentially be closer to him from the get-go and bump him and affect his run, like you see from corners and things like that.
Yeah.
or just drop a yard and take the space away. But from the moment you see that space there, it's going to encourage the ball to come in. It's going to encourage somebody to make the run. And you can only react. And when you're reacting like that, you're hoping that somebody misses. But João Félix, like, it's a great ball in.
Yeah,
so hoping that he's going to miss isn't necessarily going to be like a good long-term strategy for you, I'd say.
No, that's right. That's right. I still think there's problem defensively for United. Mm-hmm. Varane, Lindelof, even Shaw last night under pressure. The inability at times to beat the press. I mean, yeah. I really thought it was so easy to press them.
Yeah.
And Atleti haven't done it that well this season. Mm-hmm. And yet they come up against United. And yeah, you're right. They fired up. This is their best game. They turned it on when they had to.
Yeah.
But it was easy to press them.
I agree. And I think at times there's human nature, there's a human element to this. Yeah. Like some of the teams who we see who always break the press, that I'd argue they're inhuman. Because when the pressure is on, you worry about making a mistake. When you worry about making a mistake, you start to take less chances.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll start going longer, but then that means you're sort of taking away 3-4 players from the game who potentially would have wanted the ball. And then you're playing something which isn't essentially your strength. Like the sort of, like playing out from the back, in my opinion, especially when you're being pressed, requires a lot of character, a lot of technique as well. So you can have the technique, but if you don't have the character, it's not going to work. And then the moment one or two of you don't have that matching character, then it all falls to pieces. So the intent could be there, and someone could be saying, play it here, play it there, play it wherever.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But it's not going to go well. And that's why, in my opinion, so many turnovers. Like, and it's just, and sloppiness as well. And once that starts, like the thing is, players always start well, start well, start well. But when you don't start well, it says, right now I've got to try and find my way back to level. Yeah. But then you start doing things which you shouldn't be doing. Like, you see Fernandes in that first half.
Yeah.
Like, I've given the ball away too many times. I'm going to try and just keep it simple now. I'm just going to focus in on that. But when football is the easiest, as is the case with most things, when you're just automatic, you're not even thinking about it. But you see, for some of those United players, they're worried about consequences of things going wrong. Should they make the wrong pass? Should they make the wrong move? And as a consequence, they're just nowhere near as good as they could have been if they knew that they trusted their identity, trusted what should be happening.
Yeah.
They could basically just do it with their eyes closed.
You know, the thing with Bruno is, so he gave the ball away, I think, 13 times just in the first half where he's just not working for him. But then he wins you the game. He gets you the equaliser in a way with a great ball for Elanga. Okay, yeah. Ronaldo, not really sure what he's doing, trying to tackle. And then Oblak, I think, is far from good in goal on that goal. However, the ball from Bruno is perfect.
Yeah.
So you almost acknowledge as a coach or even as a fan or whatever that, yeah, he will take a lot of risk and he will give away the ball a lot because he's trying sometimes too hard, as you said, or something too complicated. But then eventually one will go through and then that would be your goal. Or would you want him to mature, is maybe too strong, but you want him to think a bit more of, okay, when do I pass the ball? When do I try something hard? Keep my game simple. Mm-hmm. Or you just take the risk for the benefit at the end if there is benefit.
I think the 13 giveaways in that first half isn't a normal thing for Fernandes, even though I don't think he's played that well overall the recent weeks.
He tends to give the ball away a lot. But because
13 is heavy though.
Yeah,
13
is heavy.
Especially in one half. So what I would say is, I think as a manager and as a teammate as well, you want somebody who's going to be reliable. You want them to take chances, but you take chances in the final third. Because on a different day, some of those sort of turnovers which he gave, if it was against a side that was in better form, had a better attacking threat, then you punished over and over and over, and then you'd be lucky to see him even come out for the second half, because at that point he's potentially cost you the game. So I think there is a thing there, because you understand some people will try passes which aren't necessarily always going to be the safest ones, but there's still a balance there. You have to be reliable. You can't just be giving the ball away, because for some sides you give it away and you might not see it for 2-3 minutes, and before you know it, the people around you don't even want to give you the ball anymore, because all you're going to do is just waste it. And so then what's the point?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I just think this all United attacking line, and you know, we can talk later about Atleti, and I we said João Félix was fantastic. I think Angel Correa brings a lot of energy, and he must be a pain to defend again, because he's always between the line, and he's small, and he's got a very good first touch, and he's quick. Then Griezmann comes on, hit the bar. He hadn't played for 6 weeks, but you've got all those options and assets that you can use. At United, okay, Elanga comes off the bench, scores. From Rangnick, you need to give him credit, because that worked out. Not that there was many options on the bench, but that worked out. Like it worked out on Sunday at Leeds when Fred and Elanga again scored the winning goals. But Rashford, Cristiano, Bruno and Sancho. Sancho again played in the wrong position, but still, you wonder, you know, why are those four so bad? I mean, what's going on with Rashford?
I don't know him. I don't know him. It's a strange one. Like, do we just put it down to just him being out of form? Because maybe for every player, you can't be in form all the time.
Where's he starting then? Start Elanga, who clearly Rangnick likes a lot and rates a lot, and we all do.
I think Rangnick's in a very interesting position because everybody knows his tenure as Man United interim manager is very short. He's literally got maybe like 10 weeks left. That's all it is. So some of the decisions that he makes, maybe they won't be treated with the same amount of respect as a manager who you know is going to be there for another 2 years, who's set in his way, and this is what it's going to be. So I think for some players for United, like, I think he probably believes he'll get more from Elanga being able to come off the bench because he's excited to come on than somebody who now is leaving the pitch to go and sit on the bench. So say someone like Rashford or whatever, like, I'm sure he wants to play for Man United, sure. But the ego is always a thing. It's always a thing within football. And if a youngster's playing ahead of you, if somebody's thinking, well, why am I not being selected? Because when I think I'm good enough to be playing, that doesn't necessarily always bring out the best. Like, there's a conversation going on now about, like, because Ronaldo's output's dropped down a bit, should you put him on the bench? And I think Ronaldo on the bench coming on for 15, 20 minutes at a time, you're not going to find the best version of Ronaldo. Like, you could maybe find form starting. He's not going to find it on the bench. So I think for some of these guys, they're being put in and the manager's almost like hoping they can show basically what they've been shown in training, I imagine.
Yeah.
But it's not there. It's weird because on paper, like Sancho, Rashford, Ronaldo and Bruno Fernandes should be fantastic four players up top.
Yeah.
But instead, there's been something whereby the link-up doesn't work. Maybe the belief isn't there. Or people fall out of form at the worst time and they end up in a situation where Ronaldo gets one touch in the box. That should never be the case.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. I was very impressed, I have to say, by the Atleti midfielders, especially Kondogbia, who we know well in France, even if he doesn't play for us anymore. But the physicality that they had, and again, I think it's one of those where, you know, we talked earlier about if the manager motivates you before a game or your boss at the office, I would want to believe that had I been in that Atletico dressing room before the game, I could have seen El Cholo Simeone saying, like, everybody's writing you off. This is your moment. Look at this crowd. Look at how they welcomed us at the stadium.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And then I can imagine someone like Kondogbia, who, you know, who is a strong boy, who is a big boy, like, and going against Paul Pogba, who is known since they were 15 and played for France and the 16 together, and then with the national team, he's got 5 caps for France before choosing his parents' country. But it was like, I can just imagine that. Yeah, I want to show, I want to prove, and so they did. Mm-hmm. And maybe that doesn't work when you play Levante at home on a Thursday night in La Liga or whatever. But I just thought they got that spot on because they were physical, they were aggressive, they lasted longer than I thought. Yeah, okay, they dropped a little bit after the hour mark.
Yeah.
But I was like, wow, okay. Yeah. So they still have that in there. Yeah, you know, so what's the problem for the rest of the season then?
I don't know. I think we can find this sometimes. Like a Champions League game, a two-legged tie against a foreign opposition with a history or whatever, and you have a history as well in the Champions League, it just feels different. You know, it just feels like a different tie. The goals sort of weigh differently. The atmosphere is different. Teams like United, they've not played against Atletico since 1991.
Yeah.
You know, so again, that makes the game just that little bit more unique. But in terms of identity in Atletico Madrid, Simeone's been there so long. And everyone who's ever seen them play can say how they've played during the Simeone tenure. Yeah. So if you wear that shirt, this is the minimum requirement, especially in days like this against an opposition, which is different to the norm. And it's weird because I remember times seeing like Mandzukic playing basically left wing back and Griezmann playing right wing back and stuff like this. But they do that because that's the identity and that's what makes them such a tough side to play against sometimes. And even going back early in the Champions League, like they lost that home to Liverpool after Griezmann got the red card. But there was like 30 minutes in that game when he scored the two and I thought, this is prime Atleti. And maybe if they can find some more of that, they'll be good, but we'll see.
It will certainly make the second leg now Old Trafford in 3 weeks' time very, very interesting.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right, enough Atletico and Manchester United. What about some quick hits, Nathan?
Hey, Ale, let's go.
Chelsea beat Lille easily on Tuesday in their last 16 first leg, of course. The gap was just too big, Nathan, wasn't it?
It was. I think Lille at times played some nice football, but when you see the threat that they really had on Mendy's goal, it's very, very little. Yeah. So for Chelsea, it's almost like they were going through the gears at times. I think they've deserved winners come the end of it, and it's going to be an interesting tie. Second leg, obviously, being away from home. But I still fancy Chelsea to manage their way through to the next round.
You know, I think because of the gap, and even if Lille did some decent stuff, the thing is, you know, you have to almost play the perfect game, right?
Yes.
When you go to Stamford Bridge against a team like that with that talent. So how come after 8 minutes, Kai Havertz is on his own, literally, like he could be on the beach, on the corner, and no one even looks at him. The guy runs, and then it's a header. It's not even a good one, and it's a goal, and you're already, that's it, you've lost the tie already.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think when you think about how within football you make a mistake and a team scores, it can be big anyway.
Yeah.
Now add it to the highest level of like club football in Europe. You can't offer anything.
It drove me mad. It's a gift, like
I know. And that's that. You know, that's costly. Maybe that was the moment where the tie left them. But
yeah.
It is what it is, eh? So the other big talking point, anyway, is that Thomas Tuchel dropped Romelu Lukaku to the bench.
Mm.
Jules, will he be back for Sunday's League Cup final?
You know what? I did think, okay, you drop him now to take away from the whole Crystal Palace debacle. By the way, I don't know if you've ever been involved in a game where a striker, where you had the love of the ball and the striker only touched the ball seven times.
No.
Because that can't happen.
Because with the seven touches, like, stop me if I'm wrong, if I've missed this, but like you could maybe head a ball away from a defensive set piece. You could tackle
there's
someone.
Kick off, of course.
You can go and press people, all that stuff. Yeah. So there's tons of opportunities to actually touch the ball.
Yeah.
And like the two touches in the first half,
I mean,
that's outrage. If I was a player on the field and I had that many touches, I'd be losing my mind, especially as an attacker, because you bring him in and like I love Lukaku, I think he's a brilliant player.
Me too.
But surely he should be linking up with the people who are playing alongside him. Maybe he should be linking up with the people playing behind him. Surely he should be the guy for a flick on, for a chest or something. Surely he could go and press somebody that's on the ball.
But for that, Tuchel needs to change the way his team play, because right now you go a lot wide with your wing backs, with the 2v1. You play a lot with your inside 10s, and Lukaku is not involved in the build the play.
I get that. And I would totally agree that for Chelsea's style of play, the 9 will have the fewest amount of touches from anyone
else.
He's
there to finish.
And you could be there to occupy the two centre-backs to create space for others. But there's still an element of the game where you are supposed to like be close to somebody and be open enough to be able to receive the ball.
I know.
So I don't quite understand it. And I think it's going to be a big moment for him, because how does he react? Because things are clearly not going his way now. So
yeah, so I could see why you drop him. You're still good enough to beat Lille. Okay.
Yeah.
If he had been, let's say, Bayern Munich on Tuesday, I'm not sure he would have dropped him for that game, because I still think he needs Lukaku as a presence, like you said, when you play against a really, really good team. I'm not sure Kai Havertz can cut it. So you take away the pressure from Palace.
It's a big statement, especially with like Mount on the bench as well.
But that's why I think he's coming back for Liverpool on Sunday in the League Cup final.
Okay, I'm going to say that he's not coming back for that game.
Ooh.
That's what I'm going to say. And that's going to be the huge talking point for the rest of the game.
Benfica Ajax on Wednesday night was fun to watch, with plenty of intensity and 4 goals, the 2-2 draw. Do you still see Ajax going through? I mean, I think we all agreed that they were favourite before. Or do you think the Portuguese can go and upset?
I think Benfica can, but I don't think they will. I think looking at Ajax, look, the fact that Haller just keeps scoring goals and the fact they could probably get some momentum at home. And when I was watching the highlights back, like, after watching the game, you just think, Ajax just felt like they were the better side. And So I expect them to go through, but an early goal for Benfica could definitely shake things up just that little bit.
It's just, it's such a great team, and then you've got that goalkeeper who's as old as you. I think he's 38.
Listen, how old are you?
41. How old are you?
I'm 35.
Ah, so he's older than you.
So you relax, my friend. You relax.
Okay, so a goalkeeper that is slightly older than you.
Yeah, it was
when
a
you've
shame.
Got Onana. Okay, Onana was banned, remember?
Yeah,
then he didn't want to extend his contract, so I guess you kind of bench him. But surely now, the only weakness in this team is your goalkeeper, as we saw on the second goal.
Yeah, that second
surely
goal
bring
bad.
Andre back.
I was thinking, like, maybe the ball moves, like, violently in the air or something, but it really didn't.
No.
And that moment there, like, the feeling of going from 2-1 in a European game away from home
that
to
you
now
were
leaving
controlling,
the field.
Yeah.
Exactly, to then be walking away thinking it's 2-2. Like, nothing's guaranteed. It's a shame, but I'd like to see Onana back, but let's see.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a draw between Villarreal and Juventus on Tuesday. Jules, would you rather talk about Dusan Vlahovic's goal or Max Allegri's performance, or maybe both?
Yeah, I think both, Nate, because Vlahovic, we were all waiting, okay, this is his first ever Champions League game. He never even tasted European football before. Let's see how he does. Villarreal are a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 30 seconds, the guy scored an amazing goal where they controlled, I mean, the ball from Danilo to start with is
good,
amazing.
Yeah.
But then the chest control, the way he hits it on the turn, mm-hmm. where I think Albiol expect maybe
near side, yeah,
another
perhaps.
Second after or the other side, I thought was amazing. The issue I have, Ned, is that after that, he has to wait for the 91st minute to have another shot because the ball never comes to him because they played so deep with five at the back. And I'm like, why is Allegri doing this to this team? Does he really think they cannot play football? They can only defend?
Do you think he would have done that if they didn't score the early goal?
I don't know. But then it's crazy to start defending a lead after 31 seconds.
I think I understand what you're saying. And I think some coaches, and to be fair, not coaches, I'd say players, they're very reactive. Once you've got something to hold on to, it becomes that little bit harder to take another forward step. So for Juve, it just felt like it's in their nature to all of a sudden try and protect what they have, especially away from home. It's costly.
It's the wrong mindset, I think.
I think it is. But then when you really, really think about it, think how few teams actually have that mindset that you speak of. It's probably not as many as you think.
Maybe. Liverpool smashed Leeds 6-0 on Wednesday, Neds, to win their game in hand. They're now 3 points behind Manchester City. He's scared. Are you scared?
The
pressure.
I just like to say for the pod, what would I be scared of as a retired player?
Well,
what would I be scared of?
You want City to win the Premier League, and 6 games ago they were 14 points clear.
The story of 98% of all fans of football clubs is one of disappointment. So
let's getting ready.
So let's be clear. No, I still fancy City to win the title. They're top. They've won it throughout the last 4 seasons.
Yeah,
they've got a very good squad.
I'm with you. And
there's a lot of talk Liverpool are going to do it now because if they win out, then you know it's theirs. But there's a mentality like City, Liverpool just going to go to City and just beat them. I think both sides will drop points between now and the end of the season. And with that being the case, I'd like to be the team that's got a 3-point buffer at this moment in time.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
But
I find incredible about Liverpool, just to finish, is that if you look at the top 3 goal scorers in the Premier League,
they're all there.
Mane 11, Jota 12, Salah 19.
Incredible.
I mean,
it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And that's the interesting thing about that is that those are the 3 that represent Liverpool. But I think City and Liverpool have got a similar amount of goals scored.
Yeah.
But for City, like,
it's 17 different goal scorers.
Exactly.
Like
two different ways to do it. But when you're scoring goals, you know, you'll find yourself up towards the top of the league for sure.
Yeah.
Right, Jules. Should we be worried for Leeds and Bielsa after another very disappointing performance?
I think we should, Nathan. They're only 3 points above Burnley in 18th, who have 2 games in hand, I think, over Leeds. They haven't won in 5, now 4 defeats, 1 draw. And it's not just, okay, you can lose games. And we said Atleti lost 4 in a row. But it's the way they lose, the way they defend. It's still some kamikaze sort of man-marking, defending, where you follow your man. He could go to the loo and you go with him. And I'm like, why?
That's true. It's true.
You know, like, I'm like, okay, I know Marcelo Bielsa, he's a dogmatic coach, fair enough. I've got nothing against dogmatic coach. I like the pragmatic ones. I've got no problem. But I think there's a point where you need to look at your team and even yourself and say, okay, this is not working. We're going straight down, going back to the championship. Maybe just tweak something. I'm not asking you to play 5-4-1 and defend the whole time. But maybe there's something else they can do to be a bit better, a bit more resilient, a bit more solid. than what they're doing now, surely.
I think the ultimate test will be if they're still in a relegation dogfight come the last game of the season and need to get a result, and they go up against a side who could potentially damage this system, do you run with the same system and just roll the die and hope that it keeps you up, or do you change and try and play for the best?
That's the thing. 4 days after being City, Tottenham lose away at Burnley after an abject performance, very Spursy, I guess. How is that even possible, Ness?
Yeah, well, not to be too critical of Spurs, but it's a very Spursy thing to do, isn't it? Yeah. I think every time you sort of see them as like a front runner and you think there's a bit of momentum, seem to stall. And like, I'm not surprised by that result. I don't think many other people would be as well. And as the manager was alluding to, they've lost four of the last 5 games. So when you ask how is it possible that they lose to Burnley? Well, it seems like they're trending downwards at this moment anyway. So it wasn't great, especially playing against a side that are desperate for points and desperate to stay in the league. So the commitment level has to be raised again, and they just didn't match it yesterday.
And it's easier to play on the counter than to have most of the ball.
So not every team can handle being the favourite in a game.
Exactly.
And I think some teams, unfortunately, like Spurs, seem to struggle with that. And speaking of which, after the game, Conte had some very strong words, Jules. Pretty much threatening to leave, it felt like.
Externally, he said, like, maybe I'm not the right guy. Maybe the club he kept saying, you know, assess the situation or make an assessment on me. And he sounded like he didn't want to be there anymore. Because as happy as he was on Saturday after the City win, of course, this time I think hit him hard. In the sense, he kept saying, like, 4 defeats in 5, that doesn't happen to me. Mm. And I can see that, you know, if you've been a really successful manager or in whatever your job is, and then suddenly what you're doing is bad and you keep losing and you're disappointing after disappointment after disappointment, I think maybe, I don't think he's one to throw the towel, but he might be like, I don't want to be here. I'm trying everything to do. And after a good start where you thought, okay, like you said, they've got momentum now. I think it was nine games without a defeat, the first 9 games where he was back. And now 4 in 5. And it's just that game, they were terrible. They didn't create anything. They didn't have a shot on target in the first half. They were bad against Southampton.
Wolves as well, yeah.
Wolves, they were terrible. And you know what? I think I wouldn't be surprised. I think he will stay in charge, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was not in charge. They go to Leeds at the weekend, then they will have...
They have to be Leeds.
But if they don't, it's going to go wild.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting spot because you sort of... did you not realise the team is... This is Spurs.
I know.
This is Spurs. And you say he's not going to throw the towel, but he's very good at throwing people under the bus.
Yeah.
But I do wonder how much of it, makes sense, because you made certain comments about how managers change but the players don't. So is the success down to the people in charge? Because he's the first one I think who's coming with their stock really high.
Yeah.
And still nothing seems to have changed.
I know. Neymar revealed in an interview this week that he would like to play in MLS one day, Nathan, and especially because they have a lot of holidays. So for you as a former MLS player, did you feel insulted a bit?
Did I feel insulted by Neymar?
He wants to go on holidays and play in MLS.
To be honest, the way the league works, just the mere fact that he's mentioned it, that'll get a ton of clicks. That'll get a little bit more attention on MLS and they'll have enough voices pushing back against it. So I think it's a bit disrespectful to say, but the holidays aren't that much. The league runs in a different sort of calendar.
Yeah.
But then as well, if the better you do, the less time off you have. If you make the MLS Cup final, you start in February, you finish in December.
Exactly.
You've got the Champions League in January, February time. So, you know, if he hopes to be aspirate, he hopes to be good in the MLS, you will not have a lot of time off for sure. And one thing that I didn't know actually, what was Don Garber's response?
So he's obviously the MLS commissioner, the big boss if you want, and he said, thanks Neymar, but no thanks. You know, we don't want to welcome players as great as they can be or would have been before in sort of pre-retirement plan where they just want to come for the sun in Miami or in LA and then the holidays.
Can I say at this point, he said that now, but the chance comes. Please Neymar, we want you in pre-retirement phase.
We've forgotten what you said.
Come feel some sun in Miami.
The other big news in US football, US soccer, Nate, is that the US Federation has agreed to pay the national women's team as much as the men's team. It was a long fight that Megan Rapinoe and the other girls started with the US Federation, and finally they got the answer that they wanted. This is huge, right?
Yeah, it's huge. I think There's a lot of nuance to it, though, and I'd recommend everyone to really go and look at the details of the things which have been arguing about, because some things you might feel one way, but for others, maybe not. But this is a big moment because it's both parties agreeing.
Yeah.
And for the last 5-6 years, they haven't done any of that whatsoever. But the only thing that sort of is a bit concerning, I think Hope Solo was mentioning this, is that it's conditional on the agreement of the next collective bargaining agreement come the end of March.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is positive.
There's more work to do, yeah.
There's more work to be done, but this is the first time taking a step forward for sure. Jose Mourinho was sent off at the weekend and has now been banned for 2 games. What happened, Jules?
Remember, he did that phone gesture to the referee in that game at the weekend when they drew 2-2 because... Well, the dad of the referee was involved in the calciopoli, things. And he looked like he was accusing his ref to do the same and to play in the hands of the big clubs and Juventus and everything, which obviously, as you knew, he was sent off and now deservedly banned for 2 games.
Mm.
Crystal Palace beat Watford in a big game in the second half of the table on Wednesday night, Neds. They scored 4 goals with an expected goals, an XG of 0.68. I mean, it's a huge blow for Watford, of course, and Roy Hodgson, but 4 goals when you expected to only score than one.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable in terms of efficiency from Palace.
Yeah, you shouldn't necessarily give that stat out to people who are against XG.
It's true.
That's the danger of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then in some ways, you know, it can get a sort of realistic take on the type of goals that were scored, because they shouldn't be expected to score from those positions in the manner that they did. So they did overperform from that standpoint. And there were some good finishes, especially I think the Zaha's second one when he came in from the left-hand side. And I think in some ways for Watford, at least you're not giving up really big chances. And maybe the expectation is that this won't happen on a week-to-week basis.
That's true.
It's a big blow in itself, and they probably would have fancied their chances, because Palace hadn't won a game, I don't think, so far in 2022.
Yeah.
So to go and lose like that at home, it's a long way from ideal.
Yeah, could be.
Jules, you told us on Monday about the red card received by Frederic Antonetti, the Mets manager, at the weekend. He was banned for 7 games on Wednesday.
Yeah, 7 by the discipline committee that we have in France. I think he paid a bit the reputation that he already has, because he's a really hot-tempered manager. He's been sent off many times. He's had those issues before. But I think 7 is far too tough. Basically, they're playing against Lille. It's nil-nil. It's a big result for Mets, considering they're fighting against relegation. Mm-hmm. To go away to the champions and get not conceding, get a point, was great. And then he can see that the Lille president and the Lille sporting director, who were in the stands, have come down via the tunnel onto the benches in his own area,
mm-hmm.
and thank putting pressure on the fourth referee, on the linesman, on the referee by saying, like, you don't give fouls, etc. He loses chisels, to be fair, completely loses it,
mm-hmm.
And almost got into a fight with the Lille sporting director, who got too much ban himself.
So,
something not to do if you're a manager of any club, any level, but as he's been saying, they had nothing to do there. They should not have been in my technical area.
Yeah.
So I get his point. I just think 7 is too many.
What's the right number there?
So depending on how you judge him, because it's either he had the wrong attitude, the wrong behavior, and that's between 2 and 4 games, or within the rules, he like literally tried to punch someone and fight with someone, which is up to 11, I think, games banned within the, like, you know, the...
The boundaries.
So I think they went into between 4 and 11, and that's 7. I think that 4 would have been enough.
Okay.
And I think it's a big blow for Mets, because they're fighting for their lives in this league.
Can he appeal it?
He can appeal it, but, you know, it's one of those appeal committee that actually makes it even harsher, or doesn't change anything.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. UEFA are considering moving the Champions League final, Nathan, away from St. Petersburg, where it was originally planned to, potentially to Wembley or Madrid or Lisbon, on the back of what's happening, obviously, between Russia and Ukraine. It makes sense to you?
Yeah, it feels like it does. In this particular moment, yes, it does. Interestingly, though, the fact that you mentioned Wembley, like, the last time I think Europe had all their eyes set on Wembley was for the final of the Euros, and that didn't go too well overall, did it? So it's interesting that's being considered, but I think most people would agree that it's the right thing to do to move it from there. But I'm not sure. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, UEFA have announced, on as we're recording this on Thursday morning, that they will have an emergency meeting, I think, to look into this, to also look into the fact that Russia and Ukraine are involved in the World Cup qualifier. They don't play each other,
mm-hmm.
but at the end of March, one will play Scotland, the other one will play Poland. to earn a place in the playoff final to go to the World Cup. What happens to those games? Mm. You know, what happens to Russian teams, to Russia as a country, Ukraine? Ukraine have suspended the league for 30 days minimum now, okay, because of the martial law. So Shakhtar and Dynamo Kiev and all of that are not going to play. It's really serious, of course, and I think UEFA need to take their time, but take the right decision. This is a key moment, and I think, despite all the Russian interest within UEFA and sponsorship and etc., I think UEFA have to be really strong here.
It was a really good win for England's women's team against Germany on Wednesday. It was only friendly, but the team's heading in the right direction, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. They won 3-1. It was great. They played really well. Really, really good. Germany had a lot of key players missing. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we need to read too much into it. But they've been unbeaten in 14 or 15 games since Sarina Wiegman became the manager. And I think she's doing a great job. The thing is, in the summer, as you know, the Euros is in England.
Yes.
Which I think, again, is a big opportunity for the England women's team to do well. To get the fan support like we saw for the men. I don't see any reason why it should not be the same fervor and enthusiasm and passion for these Euros at home, which is exactly the same as the men's one, with a really talented England team. I heard Frank Kirby on radio this morning saying we really hope that we get the same support, and I think they deserve it.
Yeah,
so it's really promising so far. There's a long way to go, and there will be tougher games than that one against Germany, but all that confidence, the momentum going into this unbeaten run is really good, I think.
So you're saying it's coming home?
Oh, well, it might go to France first because we are very good right now, and then maybe the next one will come to you.
Okay.
Alexander Mitrovic has set a new record in the championship, Nathan.
Yeah, and the season's finished today, isn't it? He scored 32 goals and the season's all over.
I mean, amazing achievement.
Yeah, right? Of course. Well, to have 32 goals and it still be February for like a league that runs from August through to May is absolutely incredible. Mm. And I think Mitrovic has scored a ton of goals in that division. And he's exceptionally dominant down there. You know, he takes penalties, but he's also moving around well. He scores tapping, scores headers, scores goals from outside the box, scores everything, basically. But the big thing for me, though, having been somebody who's played against him in the championship, Fulham are an incredibly dominant side in the championship.
Yeah.
They're incredibly dominant. So you can have times where you'll be able to create a ton of chances because you have the better players, you have the better style of play, you dominate games and you find tons of opportunities. The Premier League is a far different
That's
challenge.
Why he struggles a bit more when they come
I think out. So. Like he doesn't become a bad player in the Premiership, but the task changes because now his team is the underdog for most of the games that they play. And in the games where they might be a favourite, there may be a slight favourite, whereas in the Championship, you'd almost argue they're a heavy favourite all the time. So it's great that he's done that. He still needs to be able to get the ball into the net. You know, that's why people get paid so much, because that's the thing that defines games more than anything. So credit to him. And I'm wondering if he's going to get to 40 goals this season. If he does, surely he takes some sort of momentum into the Premier League with that.
Definitely.
And bad news for Weston McKennie, Jules. He fractured his foot against Villarreal and he'll be out for, I think it's 6 to 8 weeks or possibly longer.
Yeah, I think up to 2 months, which is bad. We saw Joe Reyna at the weekend coming off in tears with Dortmund. Not that that injury is as bad as we feared at the time, but with McKennie, 2 months is a long time. I thought a bad tackle from Estupinan towards the end of the game. 2 months when, you know, you wanted him to get some momentum playing those key games for Juve to get that experience and hopefully bring that to the US national team. Mm-hmm. For World Cup, you know, qualifiers, and then hopefully the World Cup next year as well. So I just hope that he can recover well. We know, I don't know if you ever had a foot like a metatarsal injury.
No, I haven't, though.
But our friend Gael Clichy, for example, had one, and I know that Neymar has one as well. Mm. And Neymar had a setback, for example. I think Gael had one too. I think it's a very, very tricky injury to have, for obvious reason. It's your foot, it's a small bone, and this is the part of your body that you use the most as a player. Mm-hmm. So I really hope he makes full recovery quickly and that is solid before going again, because as for a player like him as well, with all that activity and energy and work rates, he obviously needs to be fully fit, but that is a blow. It's not good news if you're Craig Berhalter.
Yeah, for sure.
Christian Eriksen played 80 minutes in a friendly on Monday against QPR and he's getting ready to come back and play in the Premier League. That's amazing news, Nathan.
Yeah, that is fantastic news. I think given the fact that it was less than a year ago where people were wondering if he was going to be alive to see him back playing professionally again, you know, that's fantastic. Obviously, in terms of finding fitness and all that stuff, it might take a while, but I think he'll get a very good reception wherever he goes, should he get in there.
I can't wait. That's great.
But to something completely off key, What is happening in James Rodriguez's life, Jules?
Well, he's not happy, Nathan. He's at Al Rayyan, as you know, in Qatar. Mm-hmm. He's been there 5 months and he already wants to go. He wants to leave.
It's like, it's too sunny. What's the problem?
I don't know what's wrong, or maybe he doesn't like the food, or he doesn't like the level of the football played there. He hasn't done... I mean, he played 12 games, I think, 5 goals, 4 assists, something like that, 5 and 5 maybe. But I just don't understand why you can be surprised. I mean, you knew when you signed there 5 months ago, mm-hmm. what kind of adventure you would go into. So he also said that he wished he'd stayed at Everton. I'm not sure the Everton fans share the same view and that clearly Benitez was the problem and Benitez didn't want him there. So I don't know what the future... It's a shame, he's still young. I think he's 31 years old, you know, and there's a World Cup coming up. Not that Colombia might not qualify, to be fair, but still, and he's still very, very talented. Yeah, that's just crazy. Sure. Those sure. career choices that you make that are clearly wrong.
And you said you were 41.
Yeah.
So at 41, 31 is very young, isn't it? I understand where you're going for, yeah.
Well, I'm not sure you're going to come back after today's show, but that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for coming over. It was a great pleasure to have you on. We'll be back on Monday, of course, to review everything at the weekend. Gab will be back as well. In the meantime, as Gab always says, love the game, love yourself, and love your neighbour, especially.